Elizabeth II, by the grace of God of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and of our other realms and territories, Queen, Head of the Commonwealth, Defender of the Faith. To our trusty and well beloved Vice Admiral Sir David Steele, Knight Commander of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, Deputy of the Senate. Greetings. One, we do, by this our commission, under our son, Manuel and Sidney, appoint you as said Vice Admiral Sir David Steele to be our Governor and Commander-in-Chief over territory of Gibraltar during our pleasure. With all the powers, rights, privileges, and advantages to the said office belonging to our facility. And we do direct that your appointment shall take effect from the time of your taking and subscribing oath in accordance with the Constitution of Gibraltar. Two. And we hereby commend all and singular our officers and loving subjects in our said territory and all others whom it may concern to take due notice thereof and to give their ready obedience accordingly. And we do hereby direct that this our commission shall determine upon certification to that effect being given by us through one of our principal deputies of state, given of our forces and gains. This 10th day of June 2020 in the 69th year of our reign, by Her Majesty in Command, Commission appointing Vice Admiral to serve its field, KDL, to be Governor and Commanding Chief of Gibraltar.
I, David Ward Steele, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God. For the execution of office. I, David George Steele, do swear that I will well and truly serve Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, her heirs and successors, in the office of Governor and Commander in Chief of the City of Gibraltar. So help me God.
honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, Chief Justice, Director.
On behalf of the people of Gibraltar, on behalf of Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar, and the leader of this House, I have the privilege of being the first to formally welcome you to your new home in Gibraltar. It is a great privilege to welcome you to the new position you hold as the constitutional representative of Her Majesty the Queen. Under our constitutional settlement, it is a singular honour that is bestowed upon you to represent the monarch. No doubt, it will take some time to settle into this new role, and I also have no doubt that the excellent staff of the convent and convent race, and the warmth of the people of Gibraltar, will ensure that you soon acclimatise. For the people of this rock are as warm as they are hospitable. We are as welcoming of new Gibraltarians, such as yourself, as we are fearsome guardians of this, the home of the Gibraltarians. You will notice from your foray here in the Royal Navy. The Senior Service first identified the strategic significance of the rock that the Romans had called the non-pierced portion. It was the Navy that identified that beyond our strait, no one could pass without Britain's knowledge if they held the Belfaric. So this British strait is one that you will find is very different to other British places. You will find that we are not English, and this is not England. It may sound obvious to you and to the many hearing me today, but it is not as obvious to everyone as it should be. We are not Scottish, nor Irish, nor Welsh. We are Gibraltarian in our style and form, the people of the rock. And we are not bitter because we are Gibraltarian, but we are certainly also not Welsh. We are just different, British. As different as each of the British people of the great British family of nations, but no less British as a result. But bound by history, custom, and constitution into a British way of being. And of course, we are British in our own way, in our own style, with our own laws. And those laws and that constitution are the key to your important but well and tightly defined role. It enshrines also our faith and loyalty to the crown, and it enshrines our commitment to the fundamental human rights to the living, and to the rule of law as a key part of how we see our British life. Our keystone is that key factor. For nations not committed, governed, and bound by the rule of law provide none of the communal and personal legal certainty and security that we believe in the building. Our system is British also in its reference to style in the approach to the workings of the state. Our Parliament is not a carbon copy of the House of Commons, but it is greatly derived from it. That means that we can also sometimes fall into the traps into which the Commons are sometimes falling. The punch and clearly style, the fair nature of question tonight. Although I do think that there are less punches of flying and less bears hunting these days than the past. A very good thing in the last year. And in any event, the theatre here has never been as loud as it is in Westminster. If only because even the most raucous assembly of 17 cannot conjure up the noise of 650 matches. Look, we've also seen some of what the best of Westminster offers. The system of government and opposition which has served the small nation well in the past 50 years since we have abandoned the concept of the city council. Indeed, some of the oratory I heard and read in this place from members here now and some no longer here has nothing to envy some of the best oratory in Westminster. And that's true of all the incarnations of this place, from legislative council to council assembly and this now parliament. And yet, the same style of politics has obviously opened the door for many lawyers to become involved in politics. No bad thing, if you ask me. Why? Because lawyers, particularly barristers, are trained to robustly test arguments in an adversarial environment. You know that, of course, as you have trained the barrister also. the temple, also the chief justice and the leader of the opposition, who, like us, is also the chief justice and also a senator of the inn. Why is that even relevant in the 21st century to Gibraltar and in this ceremony now? For the simple reason, there are simply that it demonstrates vividly how inextricably bound into the professional structure of the United Kingdom modern Gibraltar is in its own unique way. One person in this case is not aware, and it illustrates the passion of the Gibraltarians in the defense of our homeland is the father of the house. The Gilbert has now been a member of this house for 48 years. He was first elected in 1972, the year I was born. He turned 81 yesterday, and his energy, his enthusiasm, and his entrepreneurial spirit are an example to all of us. He has been an elected member of this house now for more than half his lifetime. I believe that he is likely to be, after the retirement of Kenneth Clark and Dennis Skinner last year, the longest currently serving parliamentarian in the Commonwealth. A real human being. Indeed, he is inspiring and enterprising. But one day, the members opposite entreat me to be more like him, to adopt those parts of his economic teachings which they used to criticize and now eulogize, and which they, for their own purposes, argue that I have a theory. And yet, the very next day, he was dropped into being incensed by a new initiative from him, leading them to condemn his economic policy and clamoring him for him to be called to order by the younger, allegedly fallen disciple. I think honourable members will agree with me at least on this. Here is a man who defies conventional definition, even by his opponents. What a mark of honour, particularly in his 81st year. What a lesson to all of us on both sides of the house. And what an opportunity to record on behalf of all of us here today, no doubt, our very best wishes on his 81st birthday. You should have seen his face yesterday when he walked into the cabinet office and all broke into song in a less than harmonious rendition of happy birthday. Anyway, you arrive here some 8 months after our last general election, Joseph Fallon's 13th. Last October, our mandate for government was renewed for a historic third extended time, on the basis of a manifesto which is designed to deliver a number of key objectives. The three most relevant objectives of our program for government are the establishment of a clean Gibraltar for the government, secondly, the delivery of a new post-Brexit relationship with the United Kingdom, the EU, and our nearest neighbour, Spain, and thirdly, the continued successful management of our economy and our public finances. All of this against the backdrop of more social justice, progressive social transformation, and certainly more political and financial transparency and accountability than has ever been the case in the context of our democracy. Although those who gave less information in the past when they were in power now ask for even more. Such is the nature of politics that we get. Our manifesto, however, was explicit and detailed in setting out our plan. And we were on top to deliver against the ambitious agenda as we started to work. It was then that COVID-19 started to hit the international level. And we all have to understand this community that the work we have done together with opposition colleagues has helped us to successfully navigate the health and economic aspects of the first round of this crisis. The government can report today that there are only 5 active cases of COVID-19 identified in our community, of which only 2 today are residents of the government. But a second round no doubt remains. And that second round may contain aspects which are related to the pandemic. We may or may not see a second wave of the virus. But what the second round will certainly contain will be economic challenges, the like of which we have never faced before as an autonomous self-government administration. Those will be challenges on which I hope we will see the same unity of purpose in this space as we have during the past month. Because it's the time of the pandemic we see. We are left to the shores of time to come. We will see on the seabed all of those things we put off because we were forced to paralyze normal activity to save the lives of our fellow countrymen. And as the virus proceeds, our future challenges are again laid bare before us. But the great Atlantic has together recovered from the country. And this brings us to always to bring consensus in our work with members of this House, as we have to vote on our work on the virus. And so we hope we will be able to maintain that political goodwill and cooperation as we face the challenges and great opportunities that the establishment of a new relationship with Britain, the European Union, and Spain can present to us. This will likely present a similar moment in our history. We must be up to the challenge and ready to seize the opportunities that may present. It is also always active. As political leaders in the space, we must be too. We have faced great challenges before. Maybe years ago this month, the evacuation from the rock of Gibraltarian women, children, and some men began. As the Second World War raged, there were ships first to Africa, then to the United Kingdom, Northern Ireland, Madeira, and Jamaica. In that year, the first detachments of men who were the form of Gibraltar Defense Force were formed as Gibraltarians joined up to play their part in the war against Nazi fascism and the Axis forces. Our magnificent Royal Gibraltar Regiment and our worthy successes. The motto of our regiment is well earned. Nulli est cognabili facti concerti. In keeping with that motto, Gibraltar did not fall to the violence of the Second World War or the politics concerning it. Our evacuated people were not kept away from their home. They returned through the industry of a young, stubborn lawyer who was to become our first elected leader of the family. But they returned, not to an easy existence. They returned to homes that needed rebuilding, and they returned to become the obsession and vice of the last effective standing after the end of the war, General Franklin. He was to put good people who were horrid times, but the Gibraltarians would not bend to the world. With the deadly weapon of democracy and the ammunition of pensions and ballots, we chose to remain British in our referendum in 1967. And in 1969, the last full siege of Gibraltar began when Franco closed the frontier. Then, he hooked a loophole which he was there. And did our people waver? Never. Because facing challenges, facing down adversity, and standing up to injustice is ingrained in the Gibraltarian spirit. We will not flinch in the face of fascism, and we will not flinch in the light of the challenges we are facing now. As David Cameron did not flinch when the Minister of Defense closed its stockyard facility in Gibraltar in the late 1980s, what should have been an economic debacle became a renaissance where we added one third again to the landmass of our small nation. One third. And then less than a year to do. And like Peter Kahn did not work, where the British government was gracefully prepared to entertain sharing the sovereignty of the world in Spain in 2002. It's just not in the nature of the people of the rock and our political leadership to cower away from leadership. Such are the hardy, yet warm and kind people who now come to work among us. So, in our time and generation, as the battle has passed through a new generation of political leadership on all sides of this house, I have no doubt we will not let the voice down. We will seek to work closely together insofar as possible as we face the visible and invisible challenges of race and its marketing. And we can do so as effectively as we work closely together to face down the invisible challenge of coronavirus that remains in our state. But has today failed to take the life of any resident of Gibraltar in Gibraltar. In respect of our future relationship with the European Union, it selects the mission on Brexit has been re-established after the general election and will be briefed as their views and advice as sought as negotiations continue, as we did so successfully during the negotiation over the agreement. I hope we will also be able to work together in the House on matters related to our environment and pollution. In that respect, we have proposed the establishment of a select committee of this House on the environment. In a radical move, I have also proposed that for the first time in the modern history of Gibraltar, the select committee should be jointly chaired by me and by the leader of Gibraltar. by the Minister for the Environment and successive ministers of transport in this government, not all of this is happening. But all of this is necessary if we are genuinely committed to making the changes that are essential in the light of the climate change emergency that this House declared for the lifetime of the Lock Party. And then, of course, no use professing support for radical change to reduce the risk and to protect the environment, and then not be ready to take unpopular decisions on particular and popular, and instead side with those myopically opposing change. I'm sure honourable members will not fall into the open trap of such obvious duality. This House could also see the meeting of their committee on constitutional reform. This would be an expensive document to continue the work of constant evolution and renewal of our current principle of overriding action. There are some who have argued that the 2006 Constitution was the possible maximum level of their government's support of independence that might possibly be achievable. We have maintained that this potentially is just one particular modality of such a thing. But there are undoubtedly others, and there are undoubtedly good reasons to review and refresh parts of the Constitution. Not least of these is the fact that Gibraltar has not yet been removed from the list of non-state government territories maintained by the United Nations Committee on Decolonization. That remains a key objective of the GSLP and the Liberal Party, which we represent on this side of the House, and one, I believe, is shared by all members of this House. Brexit may even make constitutional revision inevitable, given the drafting of some sections to not admit it. Perhaps understandably at this point, that Gibraltar might one day not form part of the European Union. Section 47.3 of the Constitution, in particular, sets out that without prejudice to the United Kingdom's responsibility for Gibraltar's compliance with European Union law, matters which under this Constitution are the responsibility of ministers shall not cease to be so, even though they arise in the context of the European Union. That question is silent as to whether those provisions are somehow designed only for periods of membership of the European Union. Ironically, the section in which that paragraph appears is the section which defines the governor's special powers. I have no doubt you will already be quite familiar with it. External affairs, defense, and internal security, as well as other powers that I recall specifically in the Constitution, are the ambit of the hugely important responsibility that you are now tasked with. On external affairs, we are intended to work together. Additionally, it's also worth remembering that Section 49 of the current Constitution provides that the Governor will keep the Chief Minister fully informed of the general conduct of those matters for which you are responsible. And Section 52 provides that the Governor and the Chief Minister, so this is say you and me, at least for now, shall confer on a regular basis on the Chief Minister so you can keep the Governor informed about the policies of the Government and the public affairs of Gibraltar. We are clearly about to get to know each other much better. I, for one, very much look forward to and the work that we will no doubt be able to do together in the public interest of Gibraltar. And I have no doubt that we will. And we will enjoy doing so, and we will establish a strong partnership in rapport as we do. On that, and on all the other areas, we will do more for Gibraltar together than we ever could apart. Because I reflect now on the relationships I've enjoyed with your predecessors and hosts in my time in office, I can identify in the relationship between chief ministers and governors the clue to the success of the strong relationship that exists today between Great Britain and Gibraltar. Cooperation and strength in building an alliance of purpose born from a confluence of goodwill in our approach, good natured industry in the cause of the defense of our ideas, and good government for our people. And that rapport will be what serves the people of Gibraltar best. It is them who we must not fail, and we will not. Your Excellency, this is a time of great challenges, sure. But it is also undoubtedly a time of great opportunity. A time, therefore, for courage and clear determination of purpose and determination of action. It is in this time and generation that you are called upon to serve alongside all of us here in our respective roles. And I have no doubt that you will be our ally in time and distance, a partner in delivering progress, the honourable member of the opposition.
I do want to welcome you on behalf of all members who sit on this side of the House. We hope that you will have an enjoyable and stimulating time during your tenure as governor. Before I launch into my speech, I also want to endorse the comments of the Chief Minister and the agency that serve as the father of the House. I say nothing, of course, about the remarks about his economic policy or indeed the Chief Minister's economic policy, because I don't want to spoil the rest of that. Let's go through into Gibraltar and treasure our historic links with the British Navy. We have a long history in this part of the Western Mediterranean, and we are therefore glad to see someone from a maritime background once again in the post. As a man of the services, you are still in conflict. You will find that our people have also, for many years, evolved against a backdrop of political and military conflict. Sunday is the 30th anniversary of the end of the Falklands War. A people who feel a kinship with because of their own struggle for self-determination. And as someone who served in the Falklands War, you will appreciate that more than most. Your Excellency will find in months to come that we have a small but vibrant democracy where issues are robustly argued and tested. And you'll see that there are plenty of differences in style, policy, and approach between the various political parties. But you will also find that as a people, we have known when to come together to weather the storm or the siege over the years. Join us at a particularly challenging time in Gibraltar's history, where a number of economic, social, and political issues lie ahead. We expect change over the next few years. Sometimes in politics, challenges arise as a consequence of policies that are deliberately embarked upon. In that sense, when you control your own destiny, self-created challenges are part of the course. But sometimes challenges arise from situations that a place does not desire or create. Now we steer a course in troubled waters caused by sudden storms, and how we ensure the continued sustainability of this small country of ours is what will most mark us as a community. So much is true for the two main challenges that we have encountered at the start of 2020. The first is a bolt from the blue. The COVID pandemic has been an unprecedented challenge in modern times for the entire world. It has stolen lives worldwide, affected lots of many families, shaken the global economy, and has put many people into a cycle of economic hardship. Here in Gibraltar, we have so far bucked the international trend, and with careful, selective action worked on by members on both sides of the House, we have thankfully served the most severe public health ramifications of the crisis. But as we have kept staying throughout this pandemic, it is not over yet, and the rules of human behavior, the new rules, must remain for a while. We also need to continue to work hard to ensure that we emerge from that crisis with the fewest possible public health effects and in the best possible economic shape. The economic dimension and the repercussions of this crisis will be deep and felt over a long period. The second challenge, Your Excellency, is an inevitable result of the undesirable departure of the United Kingdom from the European Union that we neither sought nor supported. Even so, it is a political reality and one that must be grasped. Over the last couple of years, we have had our differences with the government and the withdrawal agreement, the MOU negotiated with Spain, and indeed the tax treaty, which we have debated again this month in this Parliament. But clearly, the need to now negotiate a new relationship with the European Union is, however, not only a reality, but seen more positively, can be an opportunity. We see a recalibration of the dynamics between this market territory and both the EU and our neighbours. In respect of the latter, much remains
to enjoy freedoms of movement across the border. We are, after all, Europeans by inescapable geographical justice. And in that opportunity, we should be bold and imaginative in mapping out what we want as a people. I said as much in an article in early 2017 in the aftermath of the Brexit referendum. I repeat it today. Let us not just look on the agenda of others. Let us set our own ambitious set of goals. We are all in this house united in a belief in ourselves as a nation, and that the future of the water can only be decided by people. In that sense, the decades-old contention of previous generations to the right to our land has echoed in modern Gibraltar, where we feel too that this is our land and sovereignty rests in our people. We confer democratic legitimacy on our laws and institutions. What else does that mean, other than that our agenda for the future should be as ambitious as possible in recognition of those rights to self-determination and the fact that the future is ours to decide and no one else's? We're proud of our history, we're extension, and our links to the Crown and the Commonwealth. We will jealously guard our self-government. Your role as the representative of the master is a part of our constitutional architecture. Your Excellency occupies your office on the appointment of the Majesty and by the consent of the people of Gibraltar. In 2006, in a referendum, we approved our third constitution in an act of democratic legitimacy. It is that constitution that is the supreme law of Gibraltar and which sets out the parameters and limitations of your role. Under that constitution, the Majesty is together with this Parliament, the legislature of Gibraltar. Additionally, the executive authority of Gibraltar is vested in Her Majesty. By Section 45 of the Constitution, the Council of Ministers and Her Majesty constitute the government of Gibraltar. We are, of course, Her Majesty's representative in Gibraltar and her delegate, insofar as the limited responsibilities that remain in under the Constitution. I say all that, Your Excellency, because in coming to Gibraltar and accepting this appointment, it is important not to lose sight of the constitutional role and where you fall. There have been instances in the past, sometimes significant, where the interests of the United Kingdom have differed from that of Gibraltar, where the two distinct governments of Gibraltar and the United Kingdom have disagreed, sometimes privately, sometimes publicly. The last time I was on the opposite side of this house, there was an open political warfare between the Gibraltar and British government on the thorny and disgraceful issue of joint sovereignty. Your service now is without constitutional doubt to Her Majesty the right of the government of Gibraltar. If I can put it this way, Your Excellency, you and I, the non-executive chairman of this club, and join our force. There is an expectation by Her Majesty that you may have to back to the water if called upon. You will not be expected to be one of the opening factors. Or indeed, will not even be required to occupy the seat very well. But if necessary, you may have to step onto the field of play for the red and white team and the people of the water. Your Excellency will also be required to walk the constitutional tightrope between the competences of ministers and his own limited duties in the skill of a barrier, and always in the interest of the people of Gibraltar. And sometimes issues will arise. Your Excellency, 24 hours before your arrival, the Commissioner stood down from his role at least 2 years ahead of his time. This was a man who ostensibly had all the hallmarks of someone who had energy and zest for his role. His departure was sudden I am not conscious of anything that has been or done publicly. There has been, before his departure and thereafter, in some quarters of the press and on social media, speculation as to the discharge of his conscience and the circumstances of his departure. In a small community like the Volta, there is much chatter. Your Excellency, there is a span of fame that when the river dies, it carries water. We have had occasion already to observe that the circumstances were serious, and at the very least raised questions that deserve answers. In a small country like ours, we need to ensure that the institutions and authorities are beyond question, and that the constitutional checks and balances are strong and crucial. It is also not helpful for anyone, or for democracy, for the speculation that already exists to be left to rise question. If there is no foundation to the speculation, let it be known. So to what extent, Your Excellency, when the convent issued a blind question, noting the commissioner's request to retire, rather than decisively clarify matters, to give the opposite. It will now be not true. And that is why we think there needs to be clear answers one way or the other. I'm not someone, Your Excellency, who encourages or desires the government to have anything but the ceremonial role in our affairs. But the Constitution and the present checks and balances for limited responsibility being what they are, we hope that you will respect in this matter, in accordance with the provisions that the state and teachers are funded in the police service. Remember, as we have already said, we will dispute questions in this matter. Your Excellency, we were elected on a manifest for seeking further constitutional reform to ensure better checks and balances, parliamentary and electoral reform, and greater self-government. The people on behalf of whom the government structures are run seek and deserve that those institutions be protected and that we improve our local constitutional safeguards. Your Excellency, there is much to be done over the next few years as the political, economic, and social challenges that arise come. The ones I have already touched upon sit alongside the need to tackle the traditional issues of health, housing, transport, social services, or the environment, on which there is much progress to be made. Her Majesty will find that the members of her loyal opposition will work tirelessly to improve the quality of the legislation, policy, and the life of the people of the world.
His Excellency the Governor.
Warm and very generous welcome to this day. I am honoured to be here in your Parliament and can only apologise for my delayed arrival in the Volta. That delay has, however, only made me even more eager to get down to work, fully immerse myself in the life of the Volta and to play a positive and constructive role in its future. More years ago than I really care to remember, I joined my first ship in the Royal Navy as a first-rate, very eager young officer, willing to make his mark. The ship was undergoing an intensive period of operational sea training, with fires, floods, attacks by all types of enemy ships, submarines and aircraft, a sort of controlled mayhem, being there to test us to see if we are going to be ready operationally for what lay ahead. I rushed into the engine room and asked an old and bold blue chief petty officer what I could do to help. He looked me up and down in that measured way which indicated that he had seen the likes of me before, and said quietly, just sit down, watch and listen. One day, young sir, you may be useful. Those words are ringing in my ears now, and I suspect that many here always in a very kind and considerate way, bethinking saying that this new, although now not so useful, happened. In preparing to assume this appointment, I have been distributing what you are listening from afar. But I know that nothing can compare with hearing from the people of the world themselves. Current circumstances may not allow the close engagement I would wish, at least not initially. But I am determined to listen and to be useful, not one day, but as soon as possible. One thing I will not need to be told is how special Gibraltar and its people are. Winston Churchill once said, "A country which forgets its past has no future." And it is always clear to me that Gibraltar's history has fashioned a people with a special character and an ambition for themselves and its very unique place. Typical of that character has been the way in which Gibraltar has demonstrated to the world an amazing proficiency in denying the coronavirus a strong foothold here on the rock. However, my heart goes out to the people of Gibraltar, those whose fame has always been here, and those who more recently suffered, or just here for a temporary period, who have suffered with this awful virus. The government of Gibraltar needs to take tough decisions to protect public health. And if I may be allowed, I commend the Chief Minister and his government for the way in which they have confronted this threat, and the way in which this Parliament has been as one in ensuring a timely and proper response. As ever, everyone who lives on the rock, and indeed those who daily come here to work as part of essential and magnificent public services, are rallying together to ensure that Gibraltar has remained strong in the face of adversity. We can all hope that this is but a dreadful moment in time in Gibraltar's rich and varied history, but it is one which reflects once again the personal and collective strength of all who reside and work here, and their ability to work together to overcome any challenge. The world will be a somewhat different place when we eventually emerge from the grip of this pandemic. And I hope very much that the recent necessity for distinct national action will so soon become an international collaborative approach to economic and social rebuilding. Gibraltar will face new challenges and new opportunities. If therefore I wanted one phrase to summarize the priority I set myself in my time as governor, it would be to be forward-looking. Gibraltar honors its past, lives the present, and focuses on a prosperous and inclusive future. From my home and a thousand miles away, I watch Gibraltar lower the European Union flag and raise its flag for the Commonwealth. I look forward to helping Gibraltar to reach out to all the countries and territories of the Commonwealth to forge new and exciting trade and economic partnerships. But there are also opportunities in the wider world, and it seems to me that Gibraltar is set fair to do this thing. Meanwhile, it goes without saying that Gibraltar, like the United Kingdom, will retain the closest possible economic and social relations with those nations closest to us, within the European Union and, of course, across the states of North Africa, for the mutual good of our economies, our security, and our society. None of what I have said undermines the importance of the United Kingdom's influence on sovereignty, underpinned by the Gibraltarian people's right to self-determination. The constitutional commitment of the United Kingdom is clear. The United Government will never enter into arrangements under which the people of Gibraltar will pass under the sovereignty of another state against their freely and democratically expressed wishes. Furthermore, the United Government has also declared publicly and repeatedly that it will not enter a process of sovereignty negotiations with which Gibraltar is not content. If I may, I would like to say a few words on what the Governor in Command of the Chief means to me personally. As a naval officer, I am, of course, very mindful of the welcome and sanctuary that God has provided to those serving under the White Ensign for many years, and the support Gibraltar has given to the people. The strategic importance of Gibraltar never alters, and while the number of service men and women who are stationed here has fallen, the welcome given to those in uniform never changes. As you know, my two predecessors were Royal Marines, and while I fully appreciate the close bond between the Corps and Gibraltar, marked perpetually in the cap badge worn on the Union Bellows, I am incredibly proud that a representative of another part of the Naval Service in this time about to make his claim in the country. More important than good natured rivalry between the services, the appointment I am privileged to achieve indicates that in many ways, no other appointment can strengthen the relations between the United Kingdom and Gibraltar. I recognize my new office as the clearest possible symbol of friendship between people geographically separated but no less bound tightly together. The office represents everything that is good in mutual understanding and support, our shared loyalty to democratic principles and the rule of law, our shared values, and a selfless ambition in a dynamic and often insecure world for the great benefit of the people of Gibraltar and the United Kingdom. The office represents the guarantee of friendship and partnership. The role is also a vehicle for which to effect change where it is beneficial to all. Gibraltar's constitution provides for a modern relationship between mature democracies, both relying on each other in so many ways. As an individual, I feel very fortunate to be invited to represent Her Majesty the Queen in Gibraltar. I will do my utmost to make sure that nothing can undermine the strength of partnership that has existed for many hundreds of years between Gibraltar and the United Kingdom. I know that the relationship will be tested at times, as are relations in the closest of families. But by using a common language and through shared values and shared strategic intent, I am in no doubt that such challenges can be overcome. I have already noted that the canons in 1996 point directly at the convent. And one of my foremost aims over the course of my residence in that place is to ensure that no one ever feels inclined to use them against me. If I will watch, listen, learn, and will make sure that the voice of Gibraltar is heard and understood where it needs to be. And I hope to be more than just a symbol, playing my part in a positive way in the daily life of Gibraltar, and where my abilities are now and is committed to under the Constitution, to help this Parliament in the work that it has to do. In those ways and in others, I commit myself to the service of Gibraltar, its people and its government, and hope that in a very short order, I will indeed be useful. Mr. Speaker, I am delighted to be able to conclude with a message from Her Majesty the Queen, who has asked me to convey her continued support and admiration for the people of Gibraltar, and her very best wishes at this very challenging time.